You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
I'm your host, Connor Livesey, joined by my co-host today, Joey Ikes, and we are into draft month. We are just over 24 days away from the 2024 NFL draft. A lot to talk about, a lot to figure out over these next 3 or 4 weeks. We're going to do a mock draft today, run through a 7-round Dallas Cowboys mock draft. We have done only one of these this year, so this is our second version of a 7-round Cowboys mock draft in post-free agency, even though there wasn't a whole lot of happening in free agency. But we do have some holes that we're going to pay attention to. Try not to draft solely based on, you know, their needs, but we'll go into this with a best player available at a position of need. A viewpoint that we feel like the Cowboys will do when they get through the 2024 NFL draft. But before we get started, Joey, how you doing?
I'm doing well. It took a lot not to laugh when you said post free agency, because I didn't realize free agency happened. I thought that we just went straight to the draft and that it was like it was 1970 and players never changed teams and, you know, contract disputes weren't a thing and, you know.
Well, unlike most years, they lost a lot of players and didn't bring any in like normal. So I think that's what makes things a little interesting, because they do have quite a bit of holes on this roster. And we're going to try to navigate our way through this and fill them the best we can. Again, we're going to do this as if what we think the Cowboys will do. So if we get to the end of this and you go, this sucks, this is horrible, don't think that this is what we would do if we were the general manager of this team. This is what we think the Cowboys will do based on maybe some 30 visit information, just maybe some rumors that are swirling around a little bit. So we're going to dive in. We're going to use the PFF mock draft simulator to give us kind of a real life look at this. We're going to do 7 rounds. We're going to have this on fast for now. We might speed it up as we get a little bit later, but Joey, you ready to dive on in?
Let's get after it.
All right. So we got 24th overall pick. We're going to go ahead and get started here. We might pause it here in a second and let you know what's off the board. So far we have the three quarterbacks went 1, 2, 3.
The three wide receivers,
four, five, six. Joe Alt has gone. Talese Fuega is gone. Byron Murphy is gone. Liatu Leitu is gone. Jerzon Newton is gone. Dallas Turner gone. J.C. Latham gone. Troy Fatanu gone. So we are at the 20th pick right now. Most of your tackles, you got Amarius Mims still there. Oh, you know.
Yeah, I think all of your second wave of tackles, like if you consider Alton Fuaga to be your.
Hold on. Olu Fashanu is still hanging around.
Yep. So Fashanu and Fatanu went. So Fashanu and the rest of your second wave of tackles, you know, the names we've mentioned a bunch.
Yeah.
Plus your center, Barton. Your centers and center tackle flex guys.
Yep. I like it. I think we're in a good spot right here.
It's a pretty darn good spot, because if we look here and we say, okay, are there four names or five names that we would love to take right here? You know, you got Fashanu, you've got Barton, you've got Jackson Powers Johnson, you've got
Mims,
you've got a bunch of guys right now that you would be thrilled. It would pretty much have to be a worst case scenario for you to wind up feeling like you're quote unquote settling for something at this 24th overall pick.
Let me ask you this right here. Say this is what happens on draft night. Are you, it's going to be tough because you don't have a lot of capital, but would you get on the phone with Pittsburgh right here and go, hey, we'd like to come up for Fashion now, and you know, we don't have any 2024 picks to give you, but we will give you, you know, we'll give you 24, 174, and a 2025 second round pick to come up and get your left, you know, left tackle. You know, you can leave your all pro at guard and Tyler Smith. I mean, I think that's something I would actually, I don't know if they'd accept a 2020. I don't think they'd, I don't know if they'd accept 24 or 2025 second and 174 to move back four spots, but if they would, I'd be all about that.
Yeah, I mean the hard thing with Pittsburgh specifically is that if Fashanau is there, I'm going to make the prediction he goes right here to 20, because as much as I want to say Dan Moore is their left tackle and he's an A&M guy, as much as he has been, you know, borderline functional for a team like the Steelers and the way they value the trenches and all that, I'm going to bet that if this popular if this happens in real life, Fashanau is the pick at 20. So I don't know that they would make that deal with you, but it's definitely worth a thought when a player like that starts to make this type of tumble and it gets within range because it's a now we're at a handful of picks that it's not a huge price to go up and get somebody.
Yeah. And I mean, like I said, like I know there's been some rumors that Broderick Jones is going to move back to left tackle where he played at Georgia, and then they're going to look to get a right tackle. So maybe they're more interested in your Amarius Mims or Tyler Guyton's here.
Oh
You know, I
man,
know.
talk about a massive duo with
Yeah. Mims and
Johnson and
Jones.
Mims. That'd be ridiculous.
Yeah. I know, you know, center is a position that, you know, Miami, Pittsburgh has been rumored to want a target here. So, I mean, I feel like in these next four picks, you're probably going to see two offensive linemen, three offensive linemen go off, but I do feel like you have four there that you would be excited to pick at 24. So, as much as I'd probably have some interest in moving up here and getting, you know, that blue chip player and a fashion out, I think that, you know, they'll, with the amount of players and the amount of picks they have in the 2024 draft, they'll probably have to sit still.
Yeah, I agree with you.
All right, let's see what happens. All
That and we
right.
know they won't pick up the phone.
That is true. Wow.
There's
Yep.
our that's the Mims pick, like you talked about.
Yeah, Mims goes to Pittsburgh at 20. Looks like they are going to move Broderick Jones to the left side, play Amarius Mims at right tackle, and have two Georgia offensive tackles, big, athletic, freakish dudes. Miami goes Terrion Arnold at 21. Didn't even recognize that he was still on the board, but I think that actually makes a lot of sense for them. Losing Xavien Howard and kind of hitting a little bit of a reset button on that defense, he's a really good pick there. Brian Thomas Jr. goes to Philadelphia at 22, which I think also makes some sense for them. Adding some speed to that offense and, you know, getting another weapon for Jalen Hurts. And then Nate Wiggins goes to Minnesota. So you, this would be truthfully, the ideal scenario here at 24. You have Olu Fashanau still on the board. You have Jackson Powers Johnson still on the board, and you have Graham Barton still on the board. Kool-Aid McKinstry still there. Peyton Wilson still there. Tyler Guyton still there. A.D. Mitchell still there. There's a couple other names. Are you sticking here and picking Olu Fashanau, getting that blue chip player? Or are you looking at the trade back options to try to move out of there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that ultimately it comes down to the evaluation on Fashanau. I think, like, from a pure analytics, you know, standpoint, how do you think about this stuff? It makes sense in this scenario to trade back because if especially if you think about offensive line as a weak link system. As in, wherever your weakest link is, that's the point of concern, not where your best player is. You know, as we've seen, when the Cowboys have carried anywhere from one to three all pro level players on their offensive line for the last 4-ish years and have had like a middle of the road offensive line, because there's been some weak spots. I think that from that standpoint, it makes sense to go back. What would they do? They would draft Fashanau here, and
I think I would.
they would brag about how he's the 12th overall player on their board, And or they would say he was the top tackle on their board, that they had him above Joe Alt and all these other guys, and they would make that statement even though it probably wouldn't be true. That's what they would do. They would take Fashion Allen and brag about how they got the best tackle in the class.
I'm not gonna lie to you, I would too. Not
Yeah,
the best tackle in the class, but he's the second best tackle in the class for me, and they're
yeah,
both
he's up
top.
there for sure.
I mean, and like I know people probably, people who will be listening to this here in a little bit, they're like, that's not realistic, but there are some whispers and rumors that, Fashanu could fall a little bit. Fuega's gotten a lot of love in this class. Graham Barton's starting to get a lot of that love in this class. Marius Mims is a guy that we've talked about a lot. There's a chance that the fourth or fifth Latham, that's another guy. Fatanu's another guy. Like, there's a chance that these teams will look at the guys like Fatanu and Latham and Fuega and go, hey, these guys are a little bit more technically sound than Olu Fashanu. And we're going to take the safer prospect over the higher ceiling guy. So while I don't anticipate this happening, I don't think it's totally out of the realm that Fashanu could be there when you get there at 24th overall.
Yeah, and my answer to all of those types of statements for the last 4 or 5 years is I remember distinctly posting screenshots of this exact draft simulator with CeeDee Lamb available at the 18th overall pick, and people saying, there's no way CeeDee Lamb will be available at 18 overall. This is so unrealistic. How could you, why would you even post this? This is when you restart the mock or skip the player because there's no way he's available. And yet there clearly is a scenario based on the thing about PFF is they got a lot of information in this thing, man. They got team needs, they got draft tendencies, they got positional value, they got all of it. And yet somehow in a scenario, in a version of the draft that exists in some multiverse, Olufashinau is there at the 24th overall pick. And if you are the Cowboys, if you have Fashanu as your 10th best player in the draft, 8th best player in the draft, tackle 2, whatever, with the needs that you have on this team, combine that with the, this is the ideal scenario where a really legitimate first round graded blue chip type offensive tackle is available at the 24th overall pick, and you happen to need, have a huge need at the position. So it lines up too well for them to trade away from it. Although we thought it lined up pretty well when they traded away from Sharif Floyd too, but it lines up too well for them to trade away from it. I think they would pick Fashanu here, and we would see that big ugly grin on Stephen Jones' face, and Jerry Jones spinning some story about how much they loved Olu Fashanu and all that other kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, like I said, I think the value here is too good. And I also think just when you look at this roster, again, I love Graham Barton. I think I've made that pretty clear on the show. I like him as a center more than a tackle, even though I think he could play tackle. But I think you add a Graham Barton, you're like, yeah, we got a pretty good tackle or a really high ceiling with still the high floor interior offensive lineman. If you draft Jackson Powers Johnson or Graham Barton, you're probably moving Tyler Smith to left tackle, which means you're going to have three new changes on that offensive line. If you draft Olufashinau, you're only going to have, you're going to insert him at left tackle and you're going to find a center or play a TJ Bass or Brock Hoffman at center. We'll obviously be able to play around with our center options here in a little bit. If there's somebody that falls to you in the draft, I think it's too good. It's kind of the CeeDee Lamb thing all over again here for me with a player that you have graded as a top 10 to 12 player. He falls to you, at the middle to back end of the first round at a position of need. And at that point, I just think it's too good to pass up. He's a plug and play left tackle. He's a guy that, like Tyler Smith, needed some technical refinement, coming into the league. He's not the most technical sound guy, needs to add a little play strength, but he's got all the traits, all the tools to develop into like that all pro caliber offensive lineman that they drafted in Tyler Smith just a few years ago.
Absolutely. And I remember last year when it was time to declare for the draft and Fashanu decided he was going back to Penn State, and how surprised all of the guys who cover the draft year round, like you are or were, because they all expected him to come out because they all expected him to be a top 10 pick.
Yeah.
And so for you to get a guy in 24 that everybody thought would be a top 10 pick in 23, and you get him at the 24th overall pick a year later, it's a no-brainer for the Cowboys, even though, John Park and Sarah Malipelli and those other folks that help with the group there might be arguing, hey, like, we've got an opportunity to maybe get some value if we go back and still get, one of the three or four offensive linemen that we thought would be available for us here at 24. I think you just have to make the pick because he's going to be the blinking light with a top 10 to 12 grade on the board for you at 24 overall.
Yep, let's do it. I like it. Let's
Yep.
see what would have happened if we would have traded. Obviously some not quite the same, but Graham Barton went in at 25, so he probably wasn't gonna make. I think the Buffalo Bills were our only trade back option. Graham Barton went at 25, Kool-Aid McKinstry went at 26, Jackson Powers Johnson went at 27. So
So
again,
you'd have wound up settling pretty. Maybe the Packers take Fashanu if you trade back with Buffalo.
right.
Although the Buffalo may have been coming up for Fashanu.
Yeah.
So it, I think you made the right call here to just go ahead and pick the really good player, because it wasn't like he was the 24th best player and you were sticking there to pick him at 24.
Right.
This is a guy that, like you said, tackle two in the class. And just a really high-end player that you're getting at 24. It's rare to be able to do that.
Yep. All right. Let's we'll stop it here and with about five picks to go and see what's on the board. So we've had, let's see what we've had happen since we picked last. We had, I just told you, 25, 26, 27, 28. Tyler Guyton goes off the board at 29 to the Lions. A.D. Mitchell goes off the pick 30 to the Baltimore Ravens. Chop Robinson goes off the board to the Chiefs at 32. Ladd McConkey goes to the Panthers at the top of the second round. Peyton Wilson goes to the Commanders at the 36th overall pick. Braden Fisk to the Panthers with the 39th overall pick. Adisa Isaac, Kingsley Suamataia. So if you're maybe looking at getting your tackle at 56, he the next graded tackles, Kingsley's Suamataia and Jordan Morgan went off at 42 and 43. Zach Frazier goes 46 to the Indianapolis Colts. Roman Wilson to the Jaguars at 48, and Ricky Pearsall to the Eagles at 50. So I love these things because the Eagles went back to back wide receivers in the first and second round. So that's fun. All
Yeah.
well, let's see what happens here. We're going to get to the 56th overall pick. Right before us, Xavier Leggett went to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Marshawn Nealon went to the Los Angeles Rams. Tavion Sanders went to the Philadelphia Eagles. Jonah Ellis went to the Cleveland Browns, and Chris Jenkins went to Miami Dolphins. All right, we are on the clock with the 56th overall pick. We do have two trade back requests with the Houston Texans and the New York Giants. Houston Texans pick at 59, and the New York Giants pick at 70. Currently on the board, we have Jermaine Burton, Rook Orihuro, Keon Coleman, Jonathan Brooks. Let's see what our linebackers look like.
I think you got everybody there,
Oh, Edge Cooper still
other than
there.
Wilson. Yeah.
Man, defense alignment.
I think this is another scenario where the last seven, eight picks right in front of you went about as well as you could imagine for the Cowboys. But this is a scenario where, if you go back to the full big board with all the positions of with everybody available, I don't think there's a blinking light like Fashanu was that would keep you from going back.
Yeah,
Right?
I agree. I'm pulling up the trade chart now to make sure we're doing something somewhat even when we put in these trades.
Yeah,
I mean,
because
again,
if you could drop from 56 to 70 even and pick up a 110 or something like that, that gives you another pick at the top 120, another pick, maybe the Giants, I don't know if they do. They probably don't because they actually sign guys, have some comp three or something like that they could give to you.
let's see what. So to move back just three spots with Houston, 59 is worth 310, 56 is worth 340. Let's see. Do you think you could get their one? So 127 from Houston is worth 45.
I
So
bet you could because they already have 123.
yeah, so
Let's
why don't
try
we
it.
see, let's see if we can get 127. 95 chance for, I mean, again, it the trade chart says that Houston's overpaying by fifth, excuse me,
By
by
like a sixth round pick, right? Something like that.
yeah, they're overpaying by 15 points on the trade chart, so that's nothing. So yeah, let's see if that gets accepted. It looks like it will. It did. All right, so we're moving back three spots here.
Who did they come get? Keon Coleman. That
Keon
feels a
Coleman.
little unnecessary, but okay.
Okay,
Yeah,
this is
and
where it
I
gets
think you're
interesting.
in a great spot right here at 59.
Feel like it's going to come down to Jonathan Brooks and Edge Cooper.
I agree with you.
Let me make sure I'm not missing something here. Again, this is what you think they are going to do. Let's see what edge rushers are available. Nothing that really gets me super
Nothing that
excited.
sings, not at this point in the draft, no.
What do we think they do here?
I think the question becomes, what grade do they have on Brooks? Because we know they're not going to move him because of the injury. So if they have a late one on Brooks and a top of two on Cooper, they probably take Brooks. I would probably take
Cooper.
Cooper because,
Both guys are 30 visits, by the way.
yes, they are. Can you go look at the running back board and see what running backs are? I would assume all of them,
Yeah.
except for, okay, so Trey Benson is there.
Yeah, everybody, no running backs have gone
The
off yet.
whole, yeah, all the running backs are available. There wasn't like a surprise running back that went 42 that we didn't see.
Nope.
I would probably take the linebacker here. I would probably take Cooper. But I've said a few times, I think for them, this is an offense heavy draft. And they probably look at an investment in somebody like Brooks as a premium resource put at running back, which they, I believe, would probably still consider a relative premium position. I don't know. What do you think? I'll let you make the pick. I think those are the two guys, is it's either Brooks or Cooper.
I think we got to determine, is there, bringing Brooks in for a 30 visit, like, is that to get another look at the knee? Or is that to, hey, we like you, we love you, we want to have you, let's check out the knee while you're here, but this is a come look at your next destination visit. Where Cooper, again, another 30 visit guy, another position of need guy. Like them bringing him in makes me think that they're actually, very interested in him. And again, I think they're interested in Brooks too. I just think here when you're, man, you're putting me in a bad spot because I would pick Cooper 10 out of 10 times. It's going back to what do we think they're going to do? And it makes me wonder with how little they've done at the running back position, can they afford to spend the second round pick on Jonathan Brooks and him not be ready to start the season? Did they see that with Tony? Again, different injury, I get it, but did they see Terrence Steele not recover great from the ACL? Did they see Tony Pollard take a while to come back from the foot ankle injury that he suffered and go, hey, I don't know if we can afford to take that. And they've done it it feels like every year they've used the second round pick on your blue star special guy, but man, it's a tough one because we hear they like Brooks a lot. We know running back's a big position of need, but so is linebacker. You'd be going into two straight rounds with feeling like you got really good value in your picks there. I mean, Eric Kendricks is only on a 1 year deal. You got some decent players behind him and Damone Clark. You got DeMarvion Overshown coming back, but he's also coming back off the ACL. I mean,
They are already doing the we're going to depend on the guy coming back from ACL thing with Trevon Diggs this
yeah.
year. So they already are showing that they're willing to do it. And I think their justification would be, we feel really good about Overshown coming back. We feel like him with a year in the building, understanding NFL offenses from being in the building and a year of training camp and all that kind of stuff, that he is a better
Wow.
player right now than Cooper would be.
Hey,
That will be their justification.
real quick, everybody's going to see this, but Stephon Diggs was just traded to the Houston Texans.
Wow.
Bills are finalizing a trade to send four-time Pro Bowl wide receiver Stephon Diggs to the Houston Texans for draft compensation.
So I guess they won't be trading up to the
Yeah,
56th
he
pick
won't.
for Keon Coleman then,
Wow. That was a I'm with you though. I think it's going to be Jonathan Brooks if he's here. If you know, especially if they're able to trade. That's another thing they'll say. And we were able to trade back and still get the player we wanted at 56.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, they will point to Overshown and Kendricks as their linebacker plan for 2024. And they will say, Overshown, Kendricks, Damone Clark is their linebacker plan for 2024, plus insert fourth or fifth round linebacker here now that we have a fourth round pick. And they will turn around and take Brooks here and take a linebacker later. Even though I think it's hard because from a positional value standpoint, they're very close. But I think they would take Brooks is probably the answer that we're
All
getting
right,
to.
let's go with Brooks. Like I said, I think it's a coin flip there, but I do tend to agree with you that I think they would probably go the Jonathan Brooks route. All right, so we got to 87.
Sorry.
Bucky Irving, Trey Benson still around. That one hurts a little bit.
Yeah, that's why I started laughing immediately, is
Yeah.
because you pick a running back at 56 and you come around later, 31 picks later, and the two best players on the board are running backs. And I don't think another running back went between you and them. So you took running back one, a full
Blake Corum did go at 78.
at 78. So you took running back one 22 picks before running back two went, and running back three and running back four, when really I bet on a lot of people's boards, Trey Benson is probably running back one or running back two. He's not on PFF board, but that's okay. With those two guys sitting there available at 87 after you pick 56, that stings a little bit for sure.
Yes, it does.
It helps that you have the fourth round, the fourth round
Yes,
pick makes you
it
feel a
does.
little bit better about it. Hey, we got the premium guy. We got the best running back. Now, again, this goes back to that story they'd like to tell themselves and tell us after every draft. Now they can come out and say, Foshanu was our top rated tackle on our board, and we picked him at 24. And Brooks was our top running back on our board, and we got him at 59. And we added a fourth round pick in the process. Look at how good we are at this. That is what they would, that is the story that they would tell us and everybody else around us and
Yeah.
themselves.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. All right. What are we looking for here? Center. Cedric Van
Yeah,
Pelton.
I think that interior offensive line idea opens back up, whether it's, but the thing is, we have a pick in the 120s now also. So there's a chance that, a lot of people in the media like Cooper Beebe a lot more than the PFF board does. But this opens up having that pick in the 120s opens up that pick to be, if Van Pran falls to that point, Zach Zinter, Drake New, all these guys in that fourth, fifth round interior offensive line range that may or may not be, and then the Tanner Bordellini, I don't know what the right word that I'm looking for is, but the trick of the PFF draft is just to pick Tanner Bordellini in the seventh round every draft, and you have a starting center in the seventh round. There's one of those every year. Last year it was Corey Trice. You could pick him in the seventh round every draft you did, and everybody be like, whoa, look at that draft. You got Corey Trice in the seventh round. Like, he's a third round player for Dane Brugler. And that's Tanner Bordellini this year. But glitch, that's the word I was looking for. But I think the fourth round pick opens up the offensive line a little bit there. What is just like, other than the running backs, it's what, Cam Kitchens, and then who, what else?
Jeremiah Trotter, I mean, I don't think they're
Yeah,
going to.
no.
He's undersized. I feel like they're kind of trying to look to maybe get a little bit more bigger and physical there. The corners are interesting. Renardo Green and Jerrion Jones, Florida State corners are good players. Cedric Van Praan, I think, is an interesting pick there. Dominic Puny's another guy who's probably projected to play center guard. That would be an interesting one. Michael Hall, he's a good player, but more of a three technique, kind of lacks the size that I think they want there. Dwayne Carter, I think, is very interesting. Kind of a tweener between a nose tackle and a three tech, but plays very strong. I feel like those names at the top there are probably the ones to look at.
Yeah, I think, that whole conversation we just had, I think Van Praan may be the pick here.
I
Because,
think.
you're not going to, because Patrick Paul's a true tackle, right? Like, he's too big and long, and, too not, he's not guardy enough to be a guard. You don't really have a wide receiver option here. You'll have some coming around in the fourth round probably that are pretty decent lineup for value there in the 120s.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I think Van Praan may be the pick here. And then I think you may have, now you have a three-man competition at center slash swing interior offensive lineman. You have a rookie left tackle and third year all pro left guard. You have a veteran all pro right guard and a veteran right tackle, who hopefully will be healthy for a full season and play a lot better. I think you feel a lot better coming out of rounds one through three with a combination of Fashanu, Brooks, and Van Praan in terms of your ability to run the ball and your ability to pass protect.
Yeah, I mean, Van Praan's played a lot. I mean, he's a, what, 4-year starter at center for Georgia. I mean, he has played a lot of snaps at center. He's undersized. He's not the most powerful dude, but he's smart. He's, not a freak athlete, but athletic enough to kind of do the second level pulling, climbing, stuff that they need him to do. I mean, he's just a very smart, aware, tough football player. Again, he's not this big, strong, nasty, just mauler in the run game by any means, but he's just smart. His body positioning, his leverage, his hands, he plays good with good technique. He needs to put on a little weight. I want to say they got him at like 296. So like I said, he's on the lighter end. They got him at
310.
310. They got him at 310. I think he weighed in at 296 at the combine or something like that. So he's a little light, lighter on the lighter side, right at 300 pounds probably is what he's playing at. But I mean, like I said, he's not the most powerful dude, but he's just smart. He's in the right spot at the right times. He plays with good body position and leverage, good technique. And again, he's not a 2 or 3 year starter in the NFL by any means, but he's seen a lot of snaps in college in the SEC at Georgia, and he's played with some good offensive linemen, some good offenses, and has been a part of some really good offenses. So I think that matters. You're drafting a guy who's seen a lot of good things, played a lot of good football. So I would like this here. I mean, this is kind of right around where I have him graded, for me. So this is the first pick where you're not throwing a party for picking him, but it's like, hey, that's pretty good value at a position to need. Let's go ahead and do this.
Yeah, absolutely. And you hear stories about this dude that he's just a mean son of a gun.
Yeah.
And that, like, there are stories about, like, a 5-star recruit shows up at Georgia and goes up against Cedric Van Pran and winds up in a fight after one of the reps, and the next day winds up in the transfer portal. Maybe the story's a little exaggerated. Maybe it's not. The guy, Nick Harris from DallasCowboys.com, is the guy who told the story. He's pretty good on, he knows a lot of this college recruiting stuff and all that kind of stuff. But if that story is even 80% true, like, that's the kind of stuff that this offensive line needs. Like, they just need a mean son of a gun in the middle of it that just, aggravate people. And I looked at his combine profile. He weighed 298 at the profile or at the combine. So, and maybe that was to try to, cut down from a 5.4 to a 5.2 when he ran or something like that. Right. But if he plays in that 300 to 310 pound range, like, you've got size around him. And like you said, I mean, he spent years practicing against Jordan Davis and, those kind of guys inside. He's played against big, powerful interior defensive linemen for a long time. So I think it's a great pick.
I like it. All right. So we have drafted our left tackle. We have drafted our starting running back, and we have drafted what we think would probably end up being your starting center. We are getting to 127 with our pick that we got from trading back with the Houston Texans. I feel like here we're starting to look at wide receiver. We're starting to look at edge rushers, and maybe some corners. Is that linebacker maybe?
Yeah, I think let's look at the wide. I'd like to look at the wide receiver. I've got a homer pick that I'd like to. He's not going to be there. Okay, dang. So I've got a homer pick that
Who was your homer pick?
Anaya Smith is a freaking blast of a football. Yeah. Of course he goes to Philadelphia. They pick 3 wide receivers in the first 4 rounds. He's such a fun football player. We haven't talked about him much here, so I'll go a little bit. This is the guy who played in his time at A&M, played outside wide receiver, inside wide receiver, running back, returned kicks, and returned punts, and had like something like a 40-game streak of consecutive games with a catch. When he was in college, he did. I think he broke his leg in 2022, but decided to come back to school in 2023 and played in 2023 and was productive and all that kind of stuff. So he's a full year removed from the injury, and he's a slot. You think of him as like a slot size wide receiver. In 2022, freaking Jimbo Fisher lined this dude up at fullback and was letting him lead block on runs off the edge. Like, that's the kind of, and he was getting in there, sticking his nose in there and making the block. So that's the kind of guy you're talking about with Anaya Smith. And so I was kind of holding my breath, hoping and praying he would be there at 127. But it looks like he went a few picks ahead. But super, and you think about the new kickoff rules where it's like a little bit more like a true running play than a punt return or a kickoff return. A guy who has some experience returning kicks, so fielding the kick, but also has experience like, hey, I'm going to run this zone play and read these combo blocks and make a cut off of it. Also pretty valuable in that context. So Anaya Smith's a guy to pay attention to on day 3, early in day 3 for sure, in terms of that kind of wide receiver option that gives a lot of flexibility to your offense by having him on the team.
Yeah, no, I like Smith a lot. Kind of, right here at the middle of the 4th round. I think I have him with an early 4th round grade right now. Like I said, good player.
I think he was like 123 on PFF's board. That's why I was crossing my fingers that he would make it to us at 127, but he just didn't.
Yep. Some interesting names still on the board. We got Elijah Jones, the Boston College corner, I think is an interesting prospect. Justin Ibagibi, the Alabama edge rusher, big body, kind of a version of like a Chauncey Golston, I think, a little bit. Just a physical, like better run defender than he is pass rusher, even though he did have, you know, good pass production stats and metrics this year. McKinley Jackson's a nose tackle from Texas A&M, could be an interesting pick here. Kalen Carson, a good player from Wake Forest. Cedric Gray, the linebacker from North Carolina, is probably my favorite pick here. Let you kind of look at some of the names available and see what options you want to come up with.
Yeah, you know, I just spent 5 minutes ranting about an A&M player, and then McKinley Jackson is available on the board too, which in terms of lining up with what this team needs, he fits that really well in terms of he's a very big, disruptive interior defensive lineman. I want to say he played at 320 or 340, something like that. Yeah, PFF's got him at 325.
I think he was 327 at the combine.
Yeah, he's a large man who can also get in a gap and get up the field. And so it would be tough to say, you know, we're going to pass on that guy who probably walks in and, like, let's be honest, he's probably your starting nose tackle this year, because, you know, you got Mozzie Smith coming off of shoulder surgery while trying to put 30 or 40 pounds back on his body, while trying to build and develop, rebuild and redevelop the strength that made him, you know, somebody who was considered in the first round. But at the same time, I think the Cedric Gray linebacker pick makes a lot of sense too. Especially, you know, we'll go back to that same conversation we had about special teams and the new rules and wanting to carry more linebackers because of the way the special teams plays are going to play out, all that kind of stuff. I think there's several ways that you can go once you get down here in the fourth round. That's why it's so valuable to have this pick, is because it opens up a lot of possibilities in terms of what you'd like to do.
So our next pick's at 174. I'm trying to see if there's any, like, you know, good nose tackle options. I like Jaden Crumney a lot, the Mississippi State defensive tackle. He played hurt for most of this year, but when he was healthy in 2022 and before that, he was a really good player. I mean, you don't have a ton of just – Jordan Jefferson's a big dude, but I don't like his game at all. Gabe Hall tested really well, the Baylor defensive tackle, kind of a bigger guy. I mean, Trevin Wallace will probably be there at 174. I'm not sure he will actually in real life, but
they might take Trevin Wallace right here, if we're being honest.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because so I was talking with, I know, Clarence Hill on Twitter this was probably a month ago now, and he said that, you know, he said they're going to go offensive line, they're going to go linebacker, they're going to go defensive tackle, and they're going to go running back with their first four picks. We've covered offensive line. We covered offensive line twice, which that's been a lot of conversation. They could double dip at offensive line, but we've covered the offensive line, we've covered running back, and we've covered
and now it's whether we cover linebacker or defensive line.
Correct. Right? We got to figure out what we're going to do with this fourth pick. Is that defensive tackle? Is that – so I was trying to see if either – doesn't look like either one of those guys are 30 visits. Trevin Wallace is a 30 visit.
That's why I say they may take him here in the fourth round.
Yeah. Man, but I tell you what, I you're not wrong. They have no – defensive tackle depth on their roster.
Yeah, it's like it really feels like that Jackson here, and I don't know Christian Boyd from Northern Iowa, but it feels like Jackson might be your last real shot at somebody who has a chance to come in and play really mean. He's Boyd looks like a B-gap player mostly, so.
He plays a decent – I mean, he's kind of what I was talking about earlier, where he's a tweener between the Dwayne. I was talking about Dwayne Carter, the Duke defensive tackle, but a little bit of a tweener, where like he can play the one, he can play the three, but he kind of fits that tweener mold. There's, I think we were talking about it on Twitter the other day, but Christian Boyd's a guy who is really good at defending. Somebody posted a video of it, but he's very good at defending like the tush push. Like he he lines up and right over the center and plays a good leverage, and he's got like two or three stops of the quarterback sneak, kind of trying to tush push over the line. And somebody put, I can't remember who it was, but somebody put out a tweet that was like, every NFC East team should be looking to draft Christian Boyd. But I mean, they just, like I said, with Mozzie Smith, unsure where he's going to be, and that really being your only NFL caliber defensive tackle that can play the nose. I mean, you've kind of pinched yourself into a corner here, where I feel like you have to add a body at defensive tackle, right here in these first four picks. And he's a guy who, like you said, could come in, and I don't know if you'd like love to push him as a starter right away, but he's got the traits and the skill set to develop into a quality starter, and he might be your best defensive tackle at nose tackle as soon as he walks in.
Yeah, and it gives you the flexibility to – I think McKinley Jackson, after this conversation, is probably the pick. So if we want to go ahead and make that while a simulator is working through the next 50 picks, we can talk through this a little more. If Mozzie is able to come back but is not quite back to 2022 Michigan Mozzie, then maybe he becomes that flex A gap, B gap player, that one technique, three technique player who goes back and forth. And Jackson sort of becomes this is our true A gap plug, penetrate defensive tackle, nose tackle. Osa is your true three tech. Mozzie is your third defensive tackle who moves back and forth. And maybe he starts at nose just because he's a former first round pick and that's the way they like to do things. But those three, I think, gives you a chance at least on the interior. And then you have, some of your guys that can move inside to rush. I think it's at least a plan that you can look at and justify, like, hey, you know what? I think we can play with the three interior defensive linemen that we have right now.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. All right, I got to insert myself here in draft. I just watched him yesterday. I saw he was a 30 visit for the Cowboys, Jordan Maggi, the linebacker out of Temple. PFF has him as their 257th ranked player, but I can tell you that that is not accurate because that dude is a baller. So if I can insert myself as him as the last pick in the third to last pick in the fifth round, I got to go ahead and do that.
You convinced me. Let's do it.
I like him, dude. He's tall, little lanky, but man, there's something about the Temple linebackers. They just seem to come in the league and play hard. He's physical. He's not the most like instinctive linebacker, but man, he likes to see it and hit it. It's just sometimes the seeing it portion of it betrays him a little bit. But man, like the instinctive side of things can improve a little bit. But you talk about the traits, bring some pass rush to the table, good run defender, good in coverage. I think he checks a lot of the boxes as a fifth. They like to draft fifth round linebackers, and I think he's a really good fit. And like I said, they did bring him in as a 30 visit, so there is some mutual interest there.
Yeah, I think it makes a ton of sense. And of course, we're sitting here getting ready to pick at 216 in the sixth round. And of course, Tanner Bordellini goes at 215 to San Francisco, which that just sounds like the most disgusting potential idea ever, is to put him, that athleticism, at center with Kyle Shanahan, who knows how to put offensive linemen on the move better than maybe anybody in the league right now.
I think you'd have to draft Tanner Bordellini at 87 to get him. I think he's going to
be better than him. I agree with you. That's what I was kind of talking about the hack of the draft a lot of time is to draft him in the sixth or seventh round. Of course, he goes at 215 right in front of you, and the idea of him in San Francisco is just disgusting.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. An interesting name here that I think we need to pay a little attention to, and it's not because I think that they're bringing him in for visits or anything, is Cedric Johnson, the edge rusher out of Ole Miss. Tested really well at the combine, 6'3", 260 pounds, 33 and a half inch arms. So he's got, the arm length they kind of look for. 4.63 40, 1.671, 10 yard split, 38 inch vertical, and a 10.2 broad jump. So he's got some explosiveness to him. Again, another guy who's not the most technically sound. He doesn't play with a ton of a pass rush plan, but he's like, I hate to even say the poor man's version, but he's a version of like Sam Williams from a couple years ago, where he's just a, you know, plays with a lot of effort. He plays with that one speed type of pass rush where it's, you know, doesn't play with a lot of finesse right now, but man, he's got some explosiveness and juice to him, and he can pressure quarterbacks pretty consistently. He didn't put up a lot of production at Ole Miss, but I think he's a guy that makes a lot of sense for them here on day three, just because of, you know, his traits that he brings to the table, his length, and then some of the juice he can bring off the edge.
I think that's the type of pick that makes complete sense here. I don't know. And when you get into the sixth round, it's less about like, oh, he's not tall enough for Mike Zimmer to want to pick him. But I think that totally makes sense. And we it's funny. We have now three picks in the next 30 picks when we've had one in the last 100, it feels like. but yeah, can we look at if there are any traitsy wide receivers out there?
Mm-hmm. It gets ugly once you get into here.
Yeah, that's why I said, can we look? Because I didn't think there would be. No. Okay, so I think you're probably on the right track with an edge guy there.
I don't think PFF has him in their portal, but Tajuan Palmer, the UAB, he's a UAB receiver. He's a guy that I like a lot as a day three, but I don't think I don't think PFF has him in their simulator for whatever reason.
Yeah, I think the edge makes a lot of sense here. I mean, we've just banged the crap out of this trenches here, which is, I mean, I think that's a great way to draft. But
I mean, their edge room is in some trouble if they don't. I mean, even with this pick, like, you got Micah Parsons, you got Marcus Lawrence, you got Sam Williams, and then it gets thin pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're thinking about Chauncey Golson as an edge again with Mike Zimmer here.
Yeah,
I think they're probably thinking about Junior Fajoco as an edge. So they probably feel better about the depth than we do. But that doesn't mean that they wouldn't draft somebody like Cedric Johnson for the traits that you talked about. I think that's a perfectly acceptable pick at 216.
And I mean, shoot, like I said, my biggest thing is I mean, I don't disagree, but like Chauncey Golson's 3T2 behind Osa Digizua right now. Like,
I think we helped with part of that with the McKinley Jackson pick, right? Because that gives Mozzie some ability to move back and forth, or sure, maybe Jackson moves back and forth. But I think you're right in that.
I'm just saying they're thin at defensive tackle and edge, like severely thin right now, where it could get scary if there's an injury or so.
Yeah, absolutely. That B gap to D gap defender, if we make the Jackson pick in the fourth round, now you're looking at, okay, you've got two true A gap defenders in Smith and Jackson. Now that B, C, and D gap, you know, outside of the guard, outside of the tackle, and then outside of the tight end becomes the question. And I think you've got a few guys in Fajoco and Golson who can kind of move up and down that range. You've got a few guys in Williams, Lawrence, and Parsons who sort of stick to the outside. Now Parsons will move for rush, and so will Lawrence, but from a just down to down standpoint, I think you're right that they need at least one more body in that area for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, let's pick Cedric Johnson, and then we are going to go down, make it into the seventh round with the 233rd overall pick. I mean, at this point, you're kind of just drafting for traits, right? You're not really so much drafting for need anymore, because anybody you draft here, like if they contribute in any way at all, it's a plus. I mean, Brandon Coleman's here, the TCU, probably going to be a guard at the next level, but I just don't anticipate him being around in the seventh round. I think he's probably a top 130, 140 pick. I'd feel bad getting Fashanu and Coleman in this draft. I feel like we'd be stealing at that point. Some of the things you talked about earlier, again, like I know I know, you know, Trevin Wallace is still around. I don't think he's going to be around. But some of the things you were talking about earlier with the new kickoff rules and linebackers, I wonder if like a guy like Curtis Jacobs out of Penn State would be a guy that they might have some interest in late. Is a just a, you know, almost a pure special teamer. I mean, a guy who ran a 4.58, he jumped 35 inches. He had a 10.4 broad jump, just a really, really good athlete at the linebacker position. Is there any other positions that you might want to look at and see what traits we're seeing in some of these guys?
Yeah, I mean,
Tyler
it's funny
Owens
because
Tyler Owens is a freaky athletic safety out of Texas Tech, defensive back that kind of plays out of the slot, plays some safety.
Yeah, I mean, I think
Nathaniel Watson was a 30 visit.
I think the idea of taking another late round linebacker works here. Just because, so let's see, what year Damone Clark is going into year four. So he's going into, or is this year three? I don't know. He's going into year three because he played half the year last year. So going into year three. I think linebacker makes some sense, but I mean, when you, the thing about getting this late in the draft is it could legitimately be anything. Like there's, it's really just about, the hard thing is that you say, you look at all the guys that you have highest left on your board, and you know, you do this at a much deeper detail level than I do. And you say, oh, well, that guy probably isn't available. But those guys who you sit here and say, oh, well, he's probably not available, are the guys that they probably are the ones picking in the, you know, those are probably the ones being picked, because once you get this late in the draft, all these teams' boards get so different that it becomes crazy.
We talked about lack of three tech depth. You got Gabe Hall here, who's a pretty freaky athlete out of Baylor. Again, production technique, not, you know, we talked about drafting for traits. You know, Gabe Hall's a 6'6", 290-pound, you know, three technique who's didn't put up the best stuff at Baylor, but man, he's got some pretty freaky traits. Miles Cole's and, you know, bigger edge rusher that played at Texas Tech who, you know, might project more of as an interior defensive lineman. Those are two pretty rare athletes. I feel like, you know, you talked about us adding a little too much to the trenches. So I don't know. You want to take us in a direction you think they'll head?
Are there any traitsy tight ends around?
I was gonna say the same thing you were just getting on me about, but yeah, I see some, but I just don't know if they're gonna be around. I mean, Tanner McLaughlin, I think, is a guy who would probably be gone. Jared Wiley's a guy who I think is probably gonna be gone. But yeah, I mean, both of those guys are some interesting prospects at the tight end position.
And I say that just because, you know, you have Ferguson, you have Hendershot. Ferguson's going, or not Hendershot, you have Schoonmaker. Ferguson's going into year three of his 4-year contract. Schoonmaker's going into year two, coming off of surgery. Peyton Hendershot gave you nothing in year two. He was a net negative in year two. John Stevens is coming back from injury.
They like him.
They like him a lot, but we've seen these guys before where they like him a lot going into year one, or coming out of year one, they have an injury, and they come back, and it's just never quite the same. Like, the hype never rebuilds. They just never are able to recapture what they captured in camp. And again, we go back to this idea of, you know, having some bigger bodies that are used to kind of setting up these blocking schemes and things like that for a kickoff return. I think there's a path to a tight end you pick at 233 to make your roster, whereas I don't know that that's necessarily the case in a lot of other positions.
So if they went tight end here, do you think it would be more of a Y tight end, more of a, you know, like your Peyton Hendershot, John Stevens, that's not going to do a lot of like nasty blocking stuff for you, but can kind of play as that big slot? Because Tanner McLaughlin fits more of like your Peyton Hendershot role. You know, he's 6'5", 244, and then Jared Wiley's more of your Y tight end guy, 6'6", 250 pounds. You know, he's going to do, you know, do a little bit more of the nasty work that you're looking for from a blocking standpoint and just overall tight end standpoint.
Yeah, I think they probably would take the I'll say it this way. I would probably take the receiving type. I feel like that fits really well. I feel like Ferguson is kind of a down the middle guy right now. Like, he's a decent blocker, pretty good receiver. Schoonmaker is a way better blocker than receiver at this point, and has, you know, the size and all that kind of stuff you're looking for. And then if you roll in a Tanner McLaughlin, like you talked about, that, and he comes in and he just competes with John Stevens and Peyton Hendershot. And if, you know, you just shake those three guys up in a bag and whichever one comes out is the one who is your tight end three. I think it works. And with this level of investment, I think it makes sense. They like to get those type of tight ends late in the draft and in free agency. You know, we've seen it with Blake Jarwin. We've seen it with Peyton Hendershot. You know, we've seen it several times where they go get these downfield receiver type tight ends late in the draft. I think that one makes a lot of sense.
All right, let's pick Tanner McLaughlin out of Arizona, athletic pass catcher, to add to the mix for a potential tight end three spot. All right, with our last pick here in the draft, I think some of those linebackers we were talking about are still there. You got your athletic safety. I got to say, if Gabe Hall made it, I think he might be our pick, though. I don't know if he made it, though. Let's see. I ain't seen him gone. Let's see. Do you feel like we could still add a Gabe Hall? Is there?
Yeah, I think Gabe Hall makes a lot of sense. Gabe Hall yet? I haven't. I think the idea of Gabe Hall makes a lot of sense here. The idea of a defensive interior player from Baylor with a lot of upside also sounds a heck of a lot like the first priority free agent that they sign like 8 seconds after the draft is over. But here at 244, I think if they're getting word from Gabe Hall's agent that they're getting phone calls from six teams between now and the end of the draft, they probably would go ahead and just pick somebody like that. And
explain to me the prototypical Mike Zimmer three technique.
I mean, you know, he's probably Gabe Hall, if he's at 290-ish, is probably a little undersized for what Zim wants in the three technique. He wants probably closer to, you know, 305, 310, maybe even. I mean, think Sharif Floyd, right? They came up and took Sharif Floyd in the draft when the Cowboys traded away from him. And it was one of those like, oh, he's not enough of a gap shooter for us with Rod Marinelli, but with Mike Zimmer, he's a really good pocket pusher type fit there at three technique. So Hall may be a little light there, but the thing is, if he's 290, he might even be an edge for Zim. It might even be a, hey, let's lose 7 or 8 pounds and play at 280 and be an edge.
Yeah. Like,
be big pocket pusher, left defensive end. You're not going to run the ball to the left on us kind of guy.
We could just take my UAB receiver and that's not in the.
There you go.
The simulator. We haven't drafted a receiver yet, correct?
We haven't. We've hit the trenches about 84 times, but we haven't taken a receiver yet. I think we could do that. We could go pick the best available wide receiver on the board and just change his name in our review to your UAB Palmer wide receiver.
Yeah, I mean,
because like I said, Gabe Hall, it just sounds like, oh, we're going to sign the Baylor defensive tackle, defensive end flex guy 8 seconds after the draft is over. And, you know, he's our extra draft pick. Like, he's our guy that we give a bunch of guaranteed money and all that kind of stuff.
Right, right. No, I mean, Tejon Palmer played at UAB. I mean, he's 6 foot, 210 pounds. I mean, a big, big body guy. Tested really well at his pro day. Shows off some explosiveness after the catch. I mean, I think he's a guy that's not really getting talked about a lot. Older prospect, But I mean, I do think he's a guy that could come in and do pretty well. You know, maybe he doesn't make an impact in year one or year two, but I think he's a perfect, you know, stash him on the practice squad guy. And I don't, I mean, I do think that there's an option he could come in and play a role, you know, a Jalen Brooks role, you know, if there's an injury or something, because he does have some size, he does have some athleticism about him, he's got some explosiveness. Just small school guy that's kind of, I think some people are late getting around to him, but I mean, a player that you watch him on tape and he does put up some exciting tape for sure.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we talked about taking our McLaughlin tight end and tossing him in the bag with Hendershot and Stevens, and whoever comes out wins. You do the same thing with Palmer, toss him in the bag with Brooks and Jalen Moreno Cropper, and you know, insert your late round and David Durden, and you know, insert your late round or undrafted free agent wide receivers from the last two classes. Shake them up a little bit and dump it out, and whichever one comes out first is your wide receiver five or six or whatever this year. I think that makes it makes a ton of sense to do something like that for sure.
Yeah, he ran a 4.45 at his pro day. He benched 19 times. He had a 35-inch vertical and a 10.2 broad jump. So, you know, pretty explosive, fast dude. You know, for a 200-plus pound receiver at 6'2".
Yep, go get the traits and
And we know they don't draft a lot of, you know, 5'9", 5'8" guys. They're normally a 6 foot to 6'2" drafting team with, you know, good athleticism, but not dynamic athleticism. So I think he fits their mold pretty well.
I agree with you 100%. And they as much as Will McClay is a size queen in the early rounds of the draft, they do not shy away from their small school guys at the end.
Yep. All right. Tejon Palmer is our last pick in this draft. And that does it. So we finished up pretty good. I mean, I was obviously the first round was a big shock for us, but I think we ended up with a pretty good draft class. We plugged a bunch of holes. We added some good value. We finished with Olu Fashanau with the 24th overall pick in the first round. We traded back in the second round to 59 and selected Jonathan Brooks. We picked up a 127 in the process. We picked Cedric Van Pran with the 87th overall pick in the third round. We drafted McKinley Jackson with our trade back pickup with 120 the 127th overall pick. Jordan McGee was our fifth round pick, the linebacker out of Temple. Cedric Johnson was our high upside athletic edge rusher out of Ole Miss with the 216th overall pick. Tanner McLaughlin was our seventh round pick at 233rd overall. And then Tejon Palmer was our final pick with the 244th overall pick. The UAB wide receiver. So, I mean, with this, man, I feel like we added a starting left tackle. I feel like we added our starting running back. I feel like we probably added our starting center. We added a one technique who will probably battle things out for the starting nose tackle role. Might not get the start there because they picked Mozzie Smith really high and are going to give him the advantage, but a player we could see playing a valuable role here in 2024. Jordan McGee is a guy who will probably fight for some snaps in year one. Cedric Johnson, more of a year two, year three guy, but an athletic, high upside, explosive edge rusher to put in the mix and be your fifth or sixth edge rusher. Tanner McLaughlin could be a practice squad, possibly battle things out for that third tight end role. And then Tejon Palmer kind of in that same role. So I feel like we did pretty good for not having a lot of picks and not picking, you know, very high in any of these rounds.
Yeah, I think the top 60 went about as well as it could possibly go, in terms of Fashanu falling to you, then having the opportunity to move back a little bit and still get what I guarantee you they would say is their best running back on the board. And then that turning, being able to do that and add that fourth round pick, really, it really facilitated what you really needed to be able to do in that top 130. And it feels like that this path, especially when you add the idea that linebacker is the only position that they sign an outside free agent to, it feels like they will look at this and go, we added a left tackle that we needed. We added a starting running back that we needed. We added a starting center probably that we needed. And we added an important rotational or starting interior defensive lineman that we needed in the draft. And then in our outside free agency, we added a starting linebacker to go with our linebacker that we drafted last year, and that is our sort of linebacker pairing, with Damone Clark being the third guy. And then all the rest of the guys are sort of special teams contributors, you know, maybe surprise guys that pop up and play a role. But I think that that top 60 really facilitated that next, you know, 60 or 70 picks. And then having that extra pick in the fourth round kind of made everything easy from there.
Yep, no doubt. No doubt. Like I said, I think we'd get some extensions if we were the GMs of a team drafting like this.
I think probably so.
Well, cool. We got about three and a half weeks until the 2024 NFL draft. So I'm sure we'll do another mock draft or two over the next, you know, week, or over the next few weeks. We'll definitely bring you at least one more mock draft. We obviously record on Wednesdays. So probably the Wednesday before, we'll probably bring you a finalized look at what this thing's going to look like. It's a lot of fun, though. Like I said, it played out, I think, pretty good for us. We targeted what we needed to. We got some good value, added some traitsy picks late, and I feel like we got some players here. So that's all the job is to be done. Joey, did you see the video that came out yesterday of the Arizona Cardinals GM working the phones?
I did.
That was fun, exciting, and also depressing.
Yes. Yes, it was.
Because we get to look at the Joneses the whole time.
Yeah, sitting in their chair and Stephen Jones getting phone calls and not telling the rest of the team. That's always good.
We had to add some depressing part of this after a really good mock draft, right?
There you go.
Well, we will be back next week on the Talk in the Draft podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. Make sure you subscribe to all the shows on the Blogging the Boys podcast network. Thank you guys so much for the support. We'll be back next week on the Talk in the Draft podcast. See you then.
From data privacy to the future of TV, retail media, and beyond, the world of digital marketing is constantly in flux. So how can you keep up? Well, The Current Report is there for you. Each week, marketing leaders on the cutting edge give you the latest insight. So if it's creating a buzz, they'll be talking about it. Subscribe to The Current Report wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for this show comes from ServiceNow, the AI platform for business transformation. You've heard the big hype around AI. The truth is, AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow is the platform that puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier. All built into a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit servicenow.com/AI for people to learn more.